probably have an angry couple here today who I'm going to counsel. And they're working on it. They don't look very angry to me, but we might find a way of getting them mad before then. And then after morning tea, well, depending on how we go, sometime after morning tea, we'll then move in and look at some of the common sexual difficulties in marriage and how to deal with those. And Julie and I are going to talk together a little bit about our own experience with couples in this area and also our own journey, which is a good way of understanding sexual difficulties. If you really want to understand sexual difficulties, make a study of your own history. That's usually a good way of understanding other human beings. And we're going to do a little bit of that later on. And then our last session today, I'm going to take time to probably work in that session on my own and to work with you on some of the issues that face the church today. I'm going to have a look at things like homosexuality, probably have a little bit of a look at the whole remarriage issue a little bit. Trying to keep out, I hope, of some of the heavy theological questions, and think about it as an issue that faces us as Christians today. Also, hopefully, look at some of the other questions like some of the sexuality problems that face people in today's world. Let me just very quickly, by way of introduction, say to those of you who are not too sure about who Elkanah is, to say that Elkanah is a Christian community that began some 17 years ago, end of 1973, beginning of 1974, and commenced when a group of Christians from the Eastley Gospel Chapel met together to talk about what it really meant to be part of the body of Christ. And out of that meeting and praying and studying together, the Elkanah community started to grow. And during that time, we found an old guest house at Marysville, an old dilapidated, deserted guest house, and we took it over and began to develop it. Today, it's a magnificent place. If you haven't been there since 1988, then you owe yourself a visit. It's just a really lovely place now. It's still the old Tudor-style shell on the outside, just as it's been for nearly 60 years. But inside, it's like a brand new motel in an old skin. We've completely renovated it. We were forced to do so by the fire authorities. And when we started work on it and we took the cladding off the downstairs bedrooms, which of course, as you'll understand, hold up the upstairs bedrooms, we found that 85% of all the timber was gone, eaten out by white ants, and that has given me a very healthy respect for cement sheet. Because it was either, there are three explanations for why it was standing up. One was that cement sheet was holding it up. The other was that it was being held up by prayer. The most likely one was that the white ants had joined hands and were supporting it in that way. But now it's just a really lovely place, and it continues in its ministry of providing holidays for guests who are looking for a holiday in a Christian atmosphere. It provides residential counselling for people who need to get away and work through issues away from home. And that's an important part of our program. And it also provides training programs for enrichment programs for people in ministry, and both lay and full-time ministry. And we would like to be able to tell you a lot more about that, but we've handed out most of our leaflets on that particular topic. So if you haven't got any information on our courses, we're going to put, or even if you have and you'd like some more, we're going to have a sheet outside, and we'd like you just to put your name down if you'd like us to send you more information and the calendar of the next 2 years, so you know what's going on at Elkanah. So we'd like to do that for you. We also have a couple of videos that Julie and I have done. One is called Growth Through Life's Experiences, and it's a whole look at forgiveness and inner healing. And there's many, many copies of it in Australia and New Zealand now. And notes that go with it. It's a series of studies which you can run over 6 weeks or over 6 months or however you like to do it. And we would like you to know about that. And we also have another video series, a more recent one called Growing Together, which is a marriage enrichment video, and the other couples who work with us at Elkanah and us have worked together in developing this video. And that runs over 6 sessions, communication, conflict resolution, and so on. And the couples are involved in that, just like you would if you were in a marriage enrichment. And the idea is you get 3 or 4 couples in your lounge room, and you look at a session, you switch the video off, you get involved in the dialogue that we introduce on the video, then you switch it back on again, and it's just like being at your own private marriage enrichment. And it's called Growing Together, and it's available through Elkanah. And if you're interested in knowing more about that, please leave your name on the sheet and we'd be glad to give you all that information. I think that's all I needed to say. Just some of you will know that Julie and I directed the work for 16 years at Elkanah. Some of you might wonder why we still don't. Well, the reason is we got too old for that and we decided to resign and concentrate our energies in the ministry areas. So we're now in charge of the Ministry Enrichment Program or Enrichment Ministries Program of the Elkanah Christian Community. The community have appointed a new director, and since we've been up here, we've met some of his relatives up here. His name is Malcolm Sadler from Queensland. He's the new director of Elkanah, and we're very thrilled to have him and very thrilled to be working under his leadership down there. So, if I can welcome Julie up front, we'll get to work. One of the issues that we find commonly in marriage counselling is the issue of anger. And we wanted to say 2 or 3 things about anger today. One of them is that a lot of the anger in marriages has been brought with the couple into the marriage in the first place. Let's just talk about how that might happen. What are some of the reasons why people might come into a marriage already angry?
I believe a lot has to do with the sort of input we've had.
That's for the tape.
Go on.
As a child, if I feel that my love needs, my acceptance needs have not been met, then I can grow up feeling angry towards my mum or my dad because I feel that they haven't heard me, they haven't listened to me, maybe they've put me down, maybe I haven't come up to their expectations.
Yeah. So one of them is that because the love, I haven't felt loved as a child and as a teenager, I move into adulthood carrying a lot of that anger with
me. A lot of hurt and anger, yes.
And that anger we commonly call resentment or bitterness, and we've internalised that, and then we begin to project it on the most significant people in our lives.
So that if I have been put down a lot, and then in my own relationship you bring out a negative or put me down, that can really start to bring up all the ill feelings that I've had for a long time down here, and can cause or create terrible conflict in our own relationship.
And it can be a really puzzling thing, can't you, for a couple to find that they love each other and yet they've got this vague sort of, and often not so vague, anger toward each other, and particularly when it's triggered off by certain things. I know when we got married and I brought a lot of anger into our marriage because of my background, that one of the things that would really fire me off was to hit my head on something. And I would get really angry and take it out on you. And I think that you used to find that a bit difficult to cope with.
Yeah, I couldn't understand because it was always my fault.
Yeah.
If you banged your head, it was always my
fault.
Yeah,
it was too.
I used to find that hard to cope with. And because my way of dealing with anger was to go silent.
Yeah.
You would
get more angry.
Yeah, and put that onto me, and I would just withdraw and feel inwardly angry and hurt, but not know what to do with it because I was brought up in a very strong Christian home, which I appreciate, but anger was wrong.
Mm.
So I just learned to internalise it.
So that's almost the second issue, isn't it? The first issue is that we bring, some of us bring anger with us.
Yeah.
The second issue is that we've learnt ways of coping with anger. Mm. And the various different ways we learn to cope with anger sometimes stimulates anger in other people.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you used to go silent, then I would feel, gosh, you know, how are we going to settle this? How can you have a good argument if someone won't talk? And if you went silent, I'd get really panicky.
Yeah, and to me, as a Christian, it was wrong to be fighting.
Yeah. Mm. So the more panicky I got, and the louder I got, the more panicky
the more
you
I'd
got,
and
the more you would withdraw it. Mm. And you'd go silent and wash up loud.
Yes.
And
then you'd sidle up and say, is there something wrong, dear?
Yeah. Well, I was a very sensitive Australian male. There's no doubt about that. And so there's the anger we bring with us. There's the anger that we generate by the way we relate to each other. And then there's the anger we feel because the other person doesn't understand what we're feeling. So that if I'm a good communicator and I'm trying to communicate to you and you're not a good communicator, mm-hmm. or you're not understanding my feelings, then that can be an anger-producing thing too. And lots of women particularly are very hurt in their marriages because they feel that their husbands don't hear them deeply.
Yeah, I was going to say, listening. One of the things that made me withdraw and go silent was because I was afraid to share with you what I was feeling.
Mm.
And I was afraid because you would come back at me maybe defending yourself.
Mm.
In actual fact, I wanted you to listen and to hear what I was saying.
Yeah.
But what was the point if you were going to say that's not right or that's not true,
yeah,
or I didn't do this or I didn't do that?
Yeah, but the problem was you said that a lot of what you said wasn't true. And so there was a need to defend myself, you see.
Mm.
When you said you are always doing this, I really wanted to say, no,
yes,
I don't always do it. Or
well,
when you say you never do this, I want to remind you that back in 1963 I did do it. I can distinctly remember. And so there's a lot of anger in the way we communicate, in the way we defend and protect ourselves, and a lot of anger out of the feeling that the other person isn't understanding.
Yeah, that's right. To me, I suppose one of the areas I really struggled with was, okay, I might have things out of perspective, but to get it out, I had to say, you always did this.
Yes.
Because that's how it appeared.
Yes.
And the fact that eventually you allowed me to say it, that got my anger out into the open. And then after I had cooled off, I was able to come back and say, okay, maybe you don't always do it, but let's have a look at this. This is what I'm feeling.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
By that time, I was all bloodied and bruised.
Yeah, that's right.
But I think I've learned that it's worth wearing somebody's anger, but we'll talk about that in another time. I guess the other area of anger is that the anger that comes out of hurts that occur in the marriage. And sometimes that anger can arise because the husband is just too busy and doesn't give his wife the time that she would like him to give her. Maybe sometimes it is because the wife is angry because the husband puts her down, or vice versa. Or maybe there is behaviours in the marriage that are hurtful, like the husband is really an untidy person and the wife's a very tidy person, and there's a lot of hurt goes on in those situations. Yeah.
I think perhaps another area that, I think I had to work through anyway, was being involved in the people helping field and being a fairly compassionate sort of person. It was very easy to become involved with other people because that was your ministry. That was our ministry, I guess. And to me, putting the Lord first caused me some hassle sometimes, because it always seemed that other people were first all the time concerning their problems. Mm. And I always had to be last.
Yes.
You know, the old, there's a chorus that we often sing, Jesus
first, ourselves.
Others next and yourself last. You know, it almost seems a little bit unfair sometimes, doesn't it, that we're always last. And I know I had to work through that. That used to create some anger within me because...
I could listen to you any time, couldn't I?
Yeah, well, that's often the attitude, isn't it? I'm always there.
And any time becomes no time. Because by the time it's your time, I'm so sick of hearing people talk that I don't want to listen to you anymore. And that's often true, in ministry. And we had to learn to make some priority times for that, but we'll talk about that also later on. There are a number of things that people do with anger that perhaps we should just mention before we do our role play. And one of the most common things that we do with anger is to repress it. Repression really means to deny that I'm angry. And I deny it to myself as well as deny it to everybody else. So it's a common Christian thing to deny anger. We believe that anger is sinful, and so therefore it's wrong to be angry. And if somebody accuses us of being angry, if our spouse accuses us of being angry, what we want to say is, no, I'm not angry, you see. I'm righteously indignant, maybe, but certainly not angry, and because anger is wrong. Now, the point is that when we repress anger, it goes somewhere. It usually goes inward, and it causes ulcers and nervous tension and depression and all sorts of other things. Your stomach keeps count when you repress anger. And the second thing we do with anger is we suppress it.
Funny, I was going to say, when we repress it too, we're often waiting for the next time it happens again, you know. It's because we haven't dealt with it.
Mm.
We're still there.
Probably not so much waiting, but it's there, so we plug back into it all the time. So that when the next thing happens, there's all this reservoir of unacknowledged anger. And I'm plugging back into it, and it becomes... And that's why people get upset over silly little things, because there's this big reservoir of stuff that they've done.
With
the suppression, that's a little bit different. That's not denying that you're angry to yourself. That's admitting that you're angry to yourself, but denying it to everybody else, and sticking it down inside again. But this time, instead of it affecting you in nervous tensions and depressions and ulcers, what this sort of anger does is it starts to seep out through the pores of your personality, and it comes out in terms of criticism and sarcasm and cynicism and put down, and it really starts to undermine other people. So you deny the anger to other people, but you get even with them anyway. Okay, what's some of the ways that people who suppress anger get even with others?
Oh, we don't talk.
Right, go silent. And that's a good way of getting even. You know, make him stew in his own juice for 3 days. That'll fix him up. What's another way we might get even with a person with suppressed anger?
No sex.
Yeah. Right. Okay. We'll withdraw intimacy for a while, or we'll just use intimacy as a way of rewarding good behaviour and punishing bad behaviour.
Withholding affection.
Withholding affection generally, just physical affection would be another way of getting even. Talking to your mother about him or her might be another way. Gossiping and putting him down in public, or putting her down in public. That's a ripple way of getting even, because they're helpless, aren't they? You've got visitors, and everything's nice, and then you sort of stick the knife in, you know. Nobody else knows, but your partner knows that you know all the hurt buttons, don't you? If you want to hurt your partner, you know all the hurt buttons. So you say things like, oh, you know, we really need a new set of cupboards, but my father's too busy to put them in, you see. And then you know that your husband's thinking, you rotten hound, You're only saying that because you want to get the message across that I'm not capable of putting them in. And so there's ways of getting even. And a lot of that comes out of suppressed anger. Anger that we're denying to others, but is really there.
I think another one that we have to watch is too, turning our children against the person we're angry at.
Right.
Or getting our children on our side and they become, you know, the... they're affected by anger that we're not resolving.
Right. Mm. Then there's the third one, and that's to express it. And we can express anger in very destructive ways. We can express it by attacking verbally, putting people down, calling them big, fat, dumb idiots, telling them they're getting more like their mother every day. All sorts of things that we know are going to hurt, or we can physically attack in expression, and we'd like to think that that doesn't apply to anybody here, but it would certainly apply to lots of the people we have to help, that there has already been physical abuse. There's already been the husband hitting the wife, or the wife hitting the husband, and a lot of physical attack in expression. And we as Christians know that there's a lot about expressing anger which is sinful. You know, if I express anger by verbally attacking, I'm sinning against the other person. And if I express anger by attacking the other person physically, I'm sinning against them in that way. So that's not really the answer. The fourth thing we can do about anger is confess it. And the nice thing about the word confess is that it pulls two things into focus. One is the concept of owning it. Owning the anger. If I'm going to confess anger, it means I'm going to say, I am angry, instead of, you make me mad. Right?
That's the hardest thing, isn't it?
Yeah,
I mean, I find that hard to say, to own it, because it's your fault.
Yeah,
So it's very hard to say that.
Because we don't separate between the behaviour and our feeling about the behaviour. So if I do something wrong, then you can pour all your anger on me and make me responsible for your anger, when the only thing I'm really responsible for is the behaviour. So to be able to say, I am angry because, is very different than saying, you make me mad. You see, when you say, you make me mad, you back a person into a corner. When you own it yourself, it makes it a lot easier. And then the third thing, the second thing that owning the anger, that confessing anger means, is that I do express it. So I own it now, but I can express it without sinning. When I own the anger as mine, it's easier to express it without sinning against the other person, because I'm not going to blame them unnecessarily, I'm not going to attack them, I'm not going to make them pay, I'm going to want them to listen to my anger, and that's a very different thing. So confessing anger is probably the only way to deal with it. And we'll explore that a little bit more.
So going silent, a way of expressing it?
Yes. Yeah, going silent is a way of... Well, it is a way of expressing it, although it's more tied to suppression. But it's a way of saying, I'm angry. I mean, the moment you go silent, I know you're angry. And I'm ready to go away for the weekend. Right. Folks are still coming in, so this lecture room is going to be sort of full. Welcome. What we're going to do now is we're going to move into our counselling session and invite you to join us. Now, there's two ways you'll get the most out of this. One is to get as involved in what goes on as you can. Imagine, if you like, you can either imagine you're the counsellees, if that's appropriate, or you can imagine you're the counsellor and get as involved and think about what would you do next and how would you be feeling if this was happening. So that's one way, and jot things down. The other way that you can you'll get a lot out of this is as questions come up during the thing, you know, things that raise issues for you, write down the issue, and then after we've done it, Graham and Dawn and myself will respond to you. We'll talk to you about how we felt and why we did the things we did. So Graham and Dawn have been the brave volunteers, and we're very grateful for that. And we suggest you might like to come forward now. Bring your chairs with you, and I might have one of those. Okay. Hello, Dawn. Thank you for coming and seeing us today. We're very thrilled about that, and obviously you've got something that you wanted to kick around with me.
Oh, I've got big problems.
Big problems, yeah.
It's Graham.
Graham's your husband?
Yeah.
Yes. And what do you mean you've got big problems?
Oh, I don't know where to start. Oh, look, I don't really think he's got any time for me, for the kids. Just job. Christian stuff as well, you know.
Right.
He's really into the Christian stuff, camping.
A really busy man.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He just sort of comes in and out when he needs a bed and a meal.
Yeah.
Occasionally when he needs, you know, a meal on time.
So you find it pretty hard to get excited about what he's doing?
Yeah, it's very hard.
Mm.
Yes, we're just left right out in the cold.
Right. Mm. So you think your family's paying the price for his busyness?
Definitely.
Yes. Mm. Is Graham going to come and see me today, or is he...
Well, he could well do. He said he would come, but you know, with Graham, the other things take precedence in a situation like
that. Right. So if he arrives, he arrives. Is that the thing?
Is he? Oh, he's very reliable on arriving, but it just could be quite late.
Yes.
Yeah, right. So I hope you're.
That's all right.
You can hang around.
Yes, we'll look forward to his arrival. And so, tell me the sorts of things that you get angry about in relation to his busyness.
Well, for a start, I spent half my life waiting for him.
Mm. Like now.
Like now.
Yeah.
Half my life. He's never ready on time. Mm. Always means well. Oh, yes, very... Always full of apologies. He really means well. So that's one of the biggest problems we have. Mm. I'm always hanging around waiting for him.
Mm.
His opening line when he comes in from work, oh, sorry I'm late.
Mm.
But it wears thin after a while.
Mm, yeah, sure.
And every night, the kids are in bed, the dinner's in the oven. Sometimes there's a special meal cooked. What's the point?
Mm. And you're a pretty on-time person, I suppose, Dawn.
Of course. Why? Why isn't the world made on time? Everything runs on time.
Yeah.
The day and the night, everything else is on time.
Yeah, and if there's not order to things, then it's really hard to cope.
Of course, yes.
And I suppose that by the time he does come home, you're feeling pretty irate. Huh?
Yes, that's putting it mildly.
Yeah. How would you put it?
Very angry.
Very angry.
And very hurt because... Well, he mustn't really want to come home, must he? If he turns up so late.
Sorry, I'm late.
Oh. Come in, Graham. Oh. Sit down.
Yeah.
Held up, I suppose.
Oh, yeah. Always something to do.
Yeah. What have you been into today?
Oh, well, somebody rang and wanted something done at the chapel and to do something on the roof and fix the roof up a bit.
Mm.
So I had to spend a bit of time with that, and I was just coming home and the phone rang and somebody wanted some extra resin, so I had to rush around and do that.
Right.
So there's always something to do.
Yeah.
Hey, was there any mail today?
No.
Oh, those stupid people at Borkham Hills, they're not delivering any mail at the moment.
Oh.
We get it about once a week, and I don't know how you... get on with running your business when you haven't got any mail coming in. The cheques don't arrive. It doesn't help.
Tell me, Graham, just chatting away here to Dawn, it seemed to me that Dawn was feeling that today was a pretty important time for her, this coming to see me.
Yeah, well, it was. It is for me too.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. Very important.
So what were you hoping we might achieve today?
Well, there's problems. We've obviously... you know, something's got to be done. I mean, I'm providing a home and I'm working, and I think Dawn doesn't seem to understand that, you know, you've got to do these things. Mm. You know, some money's got to come from somewhere.
Mm.
And Dawn's busy doing...
Oh, but just a minute. Look, they employ him to work 8 hours a day, and he gets a salary for 8 hours a day. Why has he got to work 18 hours a day? Nobody appreciates it. It's still the same salary.
But your problem is that you were brought up with a school teacher father, and you've been a school teacher, and
don't blame the father. Knock off work
at 3 o'clock, and you have tea at 4 o'clock. I can't get home at 4 o'clock. Don't you start working at 6?
Graham, it wouldn't matter if we had tea at 10 o'clock. You'd still be late.
Okay. I think I'm in the picture a little bit now. Yes. I wondered, Graham, whether you might like to. Dawn, I wonder if you just move your chair around there so you face Graham a moment. And Graham, I wonder if you mind putting your paper down. It seems to me that you two have had some difficulty sharing with each other just exactly how you feel. And Dawn's very angry, I can tell that, isn't she? Have you noticed that she's angry?
Yeah, she gets angry, yes.
Yeah. And you obviously aren't quite sure why she gets so angry.
No.
Well, one of the thought it might be a good idea is if I got Dawn to talk directly to you instead of to me, and to share with you some of the feelings she's got about the marriage right now. And I wondered if you might just listen to her, and I'll give you a chance to feed back to her afterwards what you hear. How do you feel about that? You'd be a pretty good listener, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Dawn, just for say about 2 or 3 minutes, you've got the floor, but talk to Graham rather than to me. Is that all right? Would you be happy about that?
Mm.
Okay.
I know you're different from me, but it would be nice if just sometimes, you saw things my way. I'm in the house every day with 3 little kids. They look forward to seeing you at night. I put all my effort into cooking a lovely meal. We're all ready for you coming home. You don't come. Kids go to bed without seeing you. If I had to write a list of where you placed us in order of importance, I think we'd be hard to choose whether it was work or the church or camping or Christian stuff. Just
right.
It's my turn, just a minute. I think we'd probably have work and church probably running a close first, then stack of other things, and we'd be number 10. And one day you're going to come home from work and we just won't be there. We just won't be there.
Good, Dawn. Thank you. Graham, I wonder if you'd like to relay back to Dawn what you heard there. What did she say to you?
I don't care for her or the kids. And one day she mightn't be there.
You say you do, but actions speak louder than words. I mean, words are cheap. You can come in, I'm sorry. Sorry I'm late, darling. Yes, we know that. But you need to show that you're sorry. And if you're going to show that you're sorry, you'll do something about it, and you will come home on time. You will give us some sort of space in your life. You will see the kids. You will take them out. You will help in the kitchen. You go to camp, you know, and you work into a kitchen and you're a natural in Mary Crane's kitchen, but you fail to find anything in ours. It must be a spiritual gift, working in camp kitchens. It doesn't carry over into home.
Okay, let's stop there, Dawn. I think you've said some very important things. Graham, would you like to respond to what Dawn has said? You're obviously feeling a bit cornered there, a bit
she's laid it on you a little bit. What are you thinking? What are you feeling? What would you like to say to Dawn?
I mean, she twists everything I say, so what's the use of saying something? When I try and express it, she can turn my words around. I don't put words together very well,
right.
And she just twists those words around. So I could be, you know.
Well, let's try, and if we abide by some rules here, this might be your experience of Dawn really hearing what you say. So let's try this out.
Well, I do love you. And, you know, I've got to work. I've got to keep on doing these things. I mean, I spend time with you. I spend time with the kids. We go out. We go out with the youth group.
Yes.
We actually go with the youth group.
Dawn, just listen, and you can respond later.
But, you know, not everybody goes out with their kids when they go out with the youth group. We go with them. We spend a lot of time with them. And I think it's important that we do things together as a family like that. We're serving the Lord, and we encourage them and help them to work with us.
Go on. Say anything else?
Not when she's looking daggers like that.
Okay, just stop there. Dawn, would you like to tell Graham what he just said to you?
He loves me.
Yes.
He cares. He's got to do all these things.
Yeah, right. What do you think he means by that?
I'm not sure.
Ask him.
What do you? Why do you have to do all the things you do?
Well, I think I've got to serve the Lord. I've got to do those things that please Him, and I know that it includes loving you. But you know, somebody rings up and chases something, they've just got to kind of do it.
Why are you always the one they ring?
I don't know. I suppose I do it.
For them.
Hmm.
Mm.
Yeah.
Maybe I should call you.
Graham, I think I noticed Dawn appreciating the fact that you are a doer. You know, you do things. But on the other hand, I think I'm picking up some real hostility about the fact that she is not very often on the other end of that.
Mm.
How do you feel about that? Do you feel that's unfair?
Well, I suppose it is. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Maybe we've got to do some extra thinking and praying and working it through.
Dawn, I get the feeling that Graham's feeling a little bit bruised because of your anger, you say things in a fairly direct and attacking way, and I'm wondering whether you think there is another way of getting across to Graham how you're feeling, other than undermining his value as a person.
I think I need some help.
Right. So there's two requests for help so far. Graham feels that maybe he needs some help to make more of a contribution to the family, and maybe you're saying you need some help in how to communicate your feelings in a way that doesn't make him run for cover. Do you get the feeling that you have to run for cover sometimes, Graham?
Yeah. sometimes too, you come home from work and you feel like it would be nice to have some intercourse that night, but you know, when you have an argument like that, That's put pays to that. That's finished. You know that.
Yeah.
And that sometimes gets you.
Yeah. A bit frustrating.
And it goes on and on.
Be interesting to hear you comment on that, Dawn, because you're feeling all irate. What does that do to your feelings about sexuality and intimacy?
Well, he comes home and says, "I'm sorry, I'm late. I love you." Our thoughts, our actions speak far louder than words. It's very hard to accept words when you're feeling very negative about him and about everything that is associated with him. And I guess I feel in a way, well, you know, he can't play his part, he can miss out.
Yeah, so bully for you, mate. You can read a good book tonight.
Oh no, he can go and do some work.
Graham, I picked up an interesting comment you made to Dawn before, and you said you're the daughter of a school teacher and you're a school teacher yourself.
Yeah, that's right.
That's an interesting comment. What does that mean?
Well, just on a timing and programming, you know, she's, her timing is different to in the business world. You know, you work, you're running a factory, you've got to get everything organised before you come home. I mean, I've got a 24-hour shift, and you know, there's, if I don't get the thing program organised or the night book done, so they know exactly, the fellows in the factory know exactly what to do, you know, nothing will happen all night. So I'm likely to get a few phone calls in the middle of the night because I haven't done the work before I come home.
Right.
So you know, it's better to do that and then be and not be interrupted at night.
And the comment about Dawn being a school teacher, does that mean that she's a highly organised, sort of fussy person, or what were you meaning there?
Yeah, well, just the timing. You know, they, school teachers finish about 3 o'clock and they can come home and have tea at four or half past four. Well, the business world is different.
Oh, right. So, so it was meant to convey that she doesn't really understand the pressures on high-powered businessmen. Dawn, did you want to respond to that? I see you sort of, you're not feeling very happy about that comment, I didn't.
No, because, for a start, school teachers don't finish work at 3 o'clock, but it's the principle of the thing. It wouldn't mean, we choose to have breakfast at a certain time of the day, say we say have breakfast at 7 o'clock.
You choose 7 o'clock, I don't.
You've got to have some sort of order in a household. We've got to have it as a family. We just can't have or dribble out for breakfast. It's important that we have it because we have our Bible reading with the children at breakfast time. They need to know what time to be organised for. There's 5 of us to look after in a household.
But I'm and always there at 7 o'clock in the morning.
No, Grant, 5 past. You can, never there at 7. Never.
Okay.
So it wouldn't matter what time he finished at work. He doesn't stop when it's time. He doesn't stop 5 minutes before I start to wind down. He waits till the clock hits, strikes 12. Oh, I better start thinking about coming home. And then whatever else happens after that, he just can't keep any sort of appointment, even for breakfast.
Can I just ask you both a question that I'd like you to think about and then answer? And the question's the same. As you look at your lives as you're functioning as individuals right now, not as a married couple, what would you say is the most important thing in your life? As you look at the way you're functioning, what's that saying about the most important thing to you right now in any given day? What do you think your life is, your way of coping is saying about the most important thing to you, Dawn?
To be organised and on time.
Okay. So right now that looks like that's a big major thing for you. What about you, Graham?
Serving the Lord and doing the things that he wants me to do.
So that means you're saying I need to be fairly flexible and available.
Yeah, I suppose that would include that. But just getting enough time to do the things that have to be done.
Right. Yeah. So can you both look at that? That's really important, isn't it? That you're saying, Dawn, to be organised and ordered is really very important to you right now. And Graham is saying to be able to respond to needs and have the time to do them
that's very important to him. Can you both see how that creates pain in your relationship?
Mm.
So that if we were to give you that help you were asking for before, the help would have to be in the area of some sort of compromise, some sort of movement from those two positions.
Mm.
So that.
Please turn the tape over at this point.
So that if we were to give you that help you were asking for before, the help would have to be in the area of some sort of compromise, some sort of movement from those two positions.
Mm.
So that you weren't quite as committed to that and you weren't quite as committed to order.
Mm.
And there was some flexibility there.
Mm.
How do you think you might do that, Dawn?
Be hard. I guess I'd just have to be a lot more lenient. Flexible would have to be the word. Than I have been in the past. Make allowances. No, that sounds not right. Be prepared to meet him. And talk it through with him, I guess. How can we best solve these problems? Because we both need to make some adjustments, I think.
And right now that seems a pretty hard thing to do, doesn't it?
Mm, it does.
Because you're still feeling fairly angry about the past.
Mm.
Yeah. And it may well be that one of the things you'll both have to do before you can change is to think about forgiving each other for the hurts up to now. What do you think, Graham, about that?
Yeah, well, I love her.
Mm.
You know, and I want the relationship to improve. That's been my aim all the time. I suppose I've got to start to cut out some of those things that I'm doing.
Mm.
I suppose that's a reaction. It's not forgiving. But, you know, I don't think I find it hard to forgive.
Mm.
But we'll have to work on it for sure. Mm.
Do you normally find it fairly hard to forgive, Dawn?
No, I don't think so.
Mm.
Mm. No. If I decide that's what it has to be, what it has to be.
Yeah. One of the things I wanted to just share with you before we set what we're going to do this coming week is that you two are very different people. I mean, I don't have to tell you that, do I? You know that. But one of the major areas is that you're a structured, ordered person. That's a high priority for you. And it's probably why being a school teacher was something that you did and was something you could do well, because you could maintain levels of control and order and so on. And I would imagine that in your classroom there was a fair bit of order and control. And I would imagine that if there wasn't, then your anxiety levels would have gone up quite. Now, Dawn, that isn't because you're a sinful human being. That's because you're Dawn. That's who you are. That's where your strong priority is. Whereas, Graham, I would think that you're a very, very compassionate person with a strong need to be liked and a strong need to be approved. Would that be right?
Mm, yeah.
And so therefore, a lot of the way you live is in order to please people and to do the right thing, because you really believe that's the right thing to do, that's the most appropriate thing for you to do.
Yeah.
But I'd like to say to you, and I don't know whether you've thought about this, Graham, but I'd like to say to you that you'd do that whether you're a Christian or not. You see, because that really is your personality. So it's a little bit unfair to lay on Dawn that one of the reasons you're always late is you're out serving the Lord, because it makes it sound like Dawn's not.
Mm.
You see, that's just would you agree with that? That's a little bit unfair. But what I'd like you to do is to be able this week to think about, hey, you're being faithful to your inbuilt priorities, and you're being faithful to yours.
And one of the ways to start moving forward is to start to appreciate the other person's set of priorities. So that maybe this week the homework would be for you, Dawn, noticing what Graham's doing and hearing him explain the importance of organising and stuff like that. And just listen to that. Don't listen to it angrily. Listen to it, receive it, and affirm him for this week, even if he is 5 minutes late for tea. Affirm him for his priorities. And Graham, I'd like to see you noticing a little bit about the sort of security that comes into your family because Dawn's an orders person. And maybe identifying that and affirming her this week for that. And then I'd like to see you next week, if you have time. Because I think this is something you really do need time for, and I appreciate that you see the marriage as important and you want things to change. But I'd like you to take time to affirm Dawn for that and to listen to what she's feeling about you being late. Do you think you could do that this week?
I suppose I can try.
And then we can get back together and we can talk about how you feel about that. What happened during the week and how difficult was it? Because I have a feeling that there will be some problems with that. But it's really worth trying and then coming back and sharing how you feel about that. What do you think?
Give it a try.
Dawn?
Here we go.
Before we finish, what do you think you might have... Is there anything you've gained out of today? What do you think today might have achieved for you?
Well, I think probably you've helped me to understand a bit more about Dawn and the orderedness. And the fact that she's, well, in our family, she does do a lot of that organising. She runs the clock. And I tend just to turn off and don't worry about the clock. She does that. Because, you know, one person looks after, I've got other things to do, so she can do that. So, but that's, you know, I suppose I should appreciate that she's doing that and understand that she's doing it. And I suppose I've learned a bit more about myself. In the fact that I'm not really an ordered person, and also the fact that I do need acceptance of my people. You know, maybe some of the things I'm doing, I'm simply doing them to get acceptance.
And the key comment that Dawn made in the whole of the morning, I think, was those two pregnant words, for others. Did you pick that up when you're talking about being that, and the approval you're looking for may be from others, more so from Dawn. Dawn, do you feel you've gained anything out of today?
Yes, I think it was good to be able to talk, and it was good to have a third person because I felt that you accepted and understood what I said. And I thought you could also relate to what Graham was saying, and I thought that was good to have that extra person and to be able to see, have someone who could see the a path, some sort of path ahead, and some sort of hope to improve things.
And I think perhaps the key comment that Graham made today that you could think about this week, and both of you could think about, is I've got to do these things, and. It would be really interesting for you to ponder that, what that means for him. And maybe one of the reasons he's got to do them is there is more approval out there from others than there is from you. That might be worth thinking about. Let's stop there. Normally I would pray with the couple before they go, but we won't do that. I think we should put our hands together for these two. Well done. Any thoughts, feedback, comments, questions? You know, anything that would be appropriate right now. What do you think? Yeah.
If I were Dawn, I would have come out of there feeling good, but I think I'd have also gone home thinking, well, is he going to be in for tea on time or not?
Right. You were feeling that we didn't come up with a practical solution.
Just on that, because I think that would be the frustration Dawn would have. She'd go home, well, what's the it hasn't worked.
Yeah.
Yeah, but maybe she's got the point where she says it really doesn't matter.
My feeling is that I didn't want to alleviate her of that frustration, because I want her to start to look at herself as a controller, order person, in the light of what is still always happening. Next week, when she comes back and says, look, I can understand and appreciate, but just about drove me crazy all week because he kept coming in late and I don't think last week did any good, then there's a real ground for a lot of interesting things to be explored from there. So I wouldn't want to achieve too much too quick. And I think you can sometimes be a bit counterproductive if you send people home from the first marriage counselling session feeling they've got the answers, because number one, they haven't, because it's all in the head. Number two, if they do, they mightn't come back. And I think it's really important that they come back and report what's going on. So I'd rather put people in a process. That would be what I would normally do, rather than give them solutions. So it also creates a situation where Graham could fail very early in the week. If he says, okay, even if he'd said in that session, okay, I'll try to be home on time this week, I'd have said, Graham, I don't want you to promise doing that. Because the last thing I want him to do is to fail on Tuesday. See, because that isn't appropriate for the process, I think. But I hear your point. And some of us, I think you're right. You read Dawn quite right, that if she is an older person, she would really want to go home with that sort of solution. Dawn, what do you think? How did you feel about that?
Well, I think you're being realistic. Because getting him to promise he'd do things on time wouldn't have worked. but the way you were going, it was the way it would work with him.
Mm.
Yes, definitely, because there had to be that compromise on both sides.
Right.
Yeah, I was going to say, they can and they had little communication with each other. He had little time for Dawn, and she didn't really understand his situation.
Yeah.
So I think they should be brought to the point where they can have an insight into each other's day-to-day life, into their world, in not just in airy fairy terms, but in detail, like what happens when he goes into work of the day, what sort of interruptions does he get, how does he cope with it, and what does he expect when he comes home, and conversely, what does she expect when he comes home, and then somehow work out some ground rules to work from to help that situation, to really just appreciate what the other person goes through.
Yeah, that's right, and I think that's certainly part of the process. It's probably fairly important for me not to move into that too quickly, because what I want them to do is go home feeling that somebody knows how they feel, not how they behave. So that if they know how they feel, if that starts to build, then they're going to have a lot more positivity about exploring each other's worlds a bit. So I would travel a bit more slowly. But yes, I think that's exactly one of the goals that you would be wanting to achieve. And next week when Dawn came back, I would imagine that Dawn would be saying something like, he was late a couple of nights a week, but then when I asked him about it and I listened, I realised that there was a big project on at work and he had all this to do and I never realised he had to do all that. So that's a possibility once you create the better feelings. One of the things that Dawn and Graham didn't do that they could have done, of course, would have been so angry that they wouldn't listen to each other. And in that little method I use of turning people toward each other and giving them rules to talk, quite frequently I have a real battle to get them to stay with the rules. And I have to keep stopping and saying, hey, Graham, remember you're supposed to be listening. And then when I get the husband to relay back to the wife what he's heard, he's usually not heard anything but the first sentence. And he's heard that. And then he hammers her with that. So they were very good. They did it very well. But sometimes it doesn't work out quite as well as that, and you have to work harder.
Graham, I'm particularly interested in actually how you get them together. Mm. I mean, for instance, Dawn and Graham were quite happy to to walk in late or whatever, and sit down, read the paper, fine. And but you know, a lot of circumstances that I come across, well, then you start talking and there's fire.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I'd be fairly quick about, I'd let it go just for a minute or two, just so I could get the feel of what's going on. And then I would say to them, they usually half turned away from each other and really very angry. I would say one of two things. If I felt that it was impossible to get them together, I'd say, Graham, what I want to do for a moment is, I want you to just sit and listen, and I'm going to ask Dawn to talk to me for a few minutes about the anger that she's obviously feeling. And then after she's finished, I'm going to ask you, Graham, to tell me what you heard Dawn say. And then I'm going to get you to talk to me about how angry you feel, and I'm going to get you, Dawn, to listen. So they can have their backs to each other if they like. See? And it allows for some stuff. And then once we've done that, I'd thank them for that, and I'd thank them for listening. And then I'd say, it would be really fun if you two could now face each other, and I've picked up something that you said, Dawn, and I'd like you to explain this to Graham, and I'd throw it back to Dawn, and I'd have Dawn say it to Graham. That'd be my first, but it wouldn't be a long 3-minute thing, it'd be just a statement. Then I'd say to Graham, would you mind telling Dawn what you heard? And that's how we would do it. But I want to get into that as quickly as I can, because what I want them to go home with is an experience of having been listened to. And that's the thing that's been missing, and I want them to be able to go and say, gee, you really listened to me, and you really heard what I said. That's what I'd really want to happen.
I guess also, Graham, it depends upon whereabouts, how long this sort of thing has been happening too.
Yeah,
sure. It's been happening for a short while, maybe a couple of years, and quite eager to... Yeah. Rectify my play. If it happens, it's further along the track.
Yeah.
Maybe there's not quite happy. It's like you said on Saturday about the anger eventually grows and chokes out the love.
There's a few terms that will give you some clues. For instance, if a person's saying, a lot of the time saying, oh, what's the use? You can be pretty sure that this is a long-term thing, right? And then every now and then she'll say, oh, what's the use anyway? You know, we've been through all this before. It's usually that comment. If, on the other hand, the comment is, I just can't understand what's going on, or I'm really devastated, I'm too devastated to talk, then you can be sure it's either fairly new, or there's some new painful dynamic in here that needs to be ferreted out. And I wouldn't want to get too quickly into either. If they say, what's the use, I wouldn't say, well, come on, try it, it might be worthwhile. I would just keep doing it. And if they are saying, you know, I'm too devastated to talk, I'd say, well, let's just talk about the things that we're able to talk about, and we'll get into that a little later on. So I'd want not to put pressure on if I could. Mm.
How would you cope with the gradual upcoming of dangers in this dialogue? I was very impressed with Dawn's structured lifestyle. I was impressed with Graham's happy, outgoing lifestyle. He was others-orientated. Mm. But the one thing that just seemed to just clash right at the when it came, Graham, and I feel appreciative, he found it easy to forgive. And I was surprised when Dawn said she found it easy to forgive. I just didn't believe that. Mm.
Neither
did I. How do you cope with such a woman?
I probably I display one of my counselling things is that I don't confront all the time. I can confront, and I did once or twice, I think, but I don't confront all the time. So if I hear that and I think to myself, I don't really believe that,
then I know that I've got this coming week to prove that, you see. And then next week when Dawn comes back and says, I psyched myself up all day to be nice to him when he came home, and when he walked in that door, I blew up like an atomic bomb, I will want to say to Dawn, why do you think you did that? You see? And then Dawn will eventually be able to say, because I am so angry. And because all the expectations I've had of marriage for 20 years have not been met. That's why. and then we can talk about forgiveness, you see. And that'll be a lot more appropriate. Yeah. Yeah.
A similar one about the contact woman, the closest woman, which was when you seemed to be trying to contract with Dawn, that, you know, how was she going to give something here?
Yeah.
That she was saying, well, maybe I could be more lenient. And I felt she was really struggling. And and I felt that what she was looking for was more compromising things that she felt was important, rather than finding anything that she was really offering to give. And I felt things were a bit off then. I thought she was trying to generate something for you that was, I don't know how it was, but it came across as being maybe ingenuine, in that you were trying to show what you could give, but it wasn't really natural. And I was wondering whether that was sort of maybe the wrong point, that she was more looking at diminishing some things that were important to her, rather than meeting needs for a husband, which may be in a different area.
Yeah.
Summarise more with that.
Yeah.
Giving him goodies at home and appreciating them. And I was just wondering what was happening to Dawn at that point, and whether that's what she was going through.
I think one of the things that, in answer to your question and in answer to Jack's question, is this is a role play. And I was pulling in from my own experience in the past, plus from experiences of other people that I've had dealings with. So I guess that I was coming through as maybe in some areas, a little bit phony, because I wasn't being one person. And that probably can explain the answer to Jack's question, and probably the answer to yours. And there were a couple of times when your questions really threw me, because I wasn't sure whether to answer as I really was myself, or whether to maintain this facade, which was partly me, partly other people.
I think that your point is a good point, though, that it would, it could have been much more specific about the homework, that we could have come up with something a little bit more concrete, and something that centred in a bit more on her feelings toward the situation, rather than just little veneer things that were going to cover up the pain. So I think we could be more specific.
I felt very uncomfortable that her task was self-defeating.
Yeah, yeah.
That to be lenient, she would be very frustrated to do that.
Although I thought that I had balanced that a bit at the end by saying that what I wanted her to do was to be affirming, and wanted him to be affirming, so that they both did the same thing. I'm not too concerned that in the first week it's self-defeating. I really want them to keep exploring the depths of this. And in this session, we didn't get to the depths of it. And so maybe their homework is going to help them get there, I think.
Yeah. If a couple came rang you for counselling, do you ask them at that time, or when the person rings, what they're coming about?
No,
do
not
know
usually.
How to handle it?
Not usually.
That's right. How would you go on their case of a situation where someone's had an affair? That would be a
counselling
thing to hear, wouldn't it?
Well, I would do, if they came in, I would, and that was the case, and Graham had an affair, I would say, obviously, Graham, you know, now that Dawn knows about this, this is a really devastating thing, and I really think that this session we ought to give Dawn most of the opportunity just to talk about how she's feeling about that. And then maybe later, Graham, you can respond to Dawn about how you respond. So I would want her to have opportunity to explore her pain. Now, it's really interesting that what very often happens is that the wife comes in and she says, my husband has told me that he's had an affair, and I want to forgive him for it because I really want the marriage to go on. He's really sorry. He's really repentant. He's been a mess for a week ever since he's told me. And, you know, I wake up in the middle of the night and he's crying and I really feel so sorry for him and I want to forgive him. That's what usually happens. A month down the track, you've got a different story. A month down the track, they come in and the husband says, she keeps asking me all the details of my affair and I'm getting sick of talking about it. And there's an edge of anger on her voice now. And this phony forgiveness thing is gone. And the anger comes back. And then you're into the difficulty. So the first counselling session is often not the hardest in situations like that. The eighth or ninth counselling session might be the most difficult. And so that's been my experience anyway. But I would use exactly the same talking together, listening together, hearing technique, because with an angry couple I think that's the best way to go. With a couple who've got some other sort of problem where they're not angry at each other, then a three-way discussion's fine. But in an angry couple I would want as quickly as possible to get them talking and hearing.
You're talking about eighth or ninth session. Have you got some contract in your mind or a contract with the people that you're counselling? Because what I'm hearing is we do need to tread slowly.
Mm.
We Christians tend to want to do it all in one session.
Yes.
So, you know, can you give us an idea?
Oh, yes. Well, I would very often not make a contract in the first session. I would want them to go away and come back a second time. We'll have a much wider understanding of the areas we have to work on. And probably in the second session, I would say to Graham and Dawn, look, I think what we ought to do is be thinking of working through this over a period of maybe 6 weeks, and I would pull a mandatory figure out of my head. If I was working on an unfaithfulness situation, I'd say, look, there's going to be a lot of pain in this for the next 6 months, and I reckon we need to be able to review the journey in that period of time, and let's decide we're going to get together on a weekly basis for that time. That would 6 months is what you call intermediate counselling. Year to 3 years would be long-term counselling, and 6 weeks would be very short-term counselling, but that's the sort of thing I would do and have a mandatory figure. At the fourth week, we might have got into some stuff that I never imagined, right? We got into some stuff where this guy turns out to be the angriest one of the couple, and he has suppressed it all, and this nice little smile he has, and this nice, I must help everybody, is really, he's punishing his mother, you know, and he's got all. Now, if I found that on the fourth week, I'd be saying, you know, it might be worth us thinking that we might need to make a contract for 10 or 12 weeks, you see, because we've got to work right through this. But I'm not going to find that in the first couple of weeks, I'm sure.
It's important to establish a relationship, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where both feel comfortable and that they go out feeling, hey, there may be some hope here.
Yeah, first session is a very important time for building hope, because often couples come with a feeling there isn't any hope, and they can go away feeling, well, maybe there is some. Yeah.
What you did there, you acknowledged their feelings from both couples, but what you're trying to do is establish differences in meaning of behaviours between the two that each other was aware of.
Yeah.
That sort of the lines you're working along?
Yeah. One of the things I'd want always to do is to help people begin progressively to understand their different preferences, so that some people have a high preference for order, some don't. Some have a high preference for affiliation, some don't. Some have a high preference for autonomy, some don't. And little by little, I'd want to pick them up. Now, I only pick one up, one each, and I'll pick more up as we go along. Now, I could short-circuit that. I could run an Edwards personal preference test on them, and I could show them over 15 areas of their life in a little over an hour what the situation is. But I don't do that normally with long-term counsellors. I would do that if somebody came and said, look, I've just come back from the mission, I'm just going to the mission field tomorrow and I've got this problem, I'd run a test on them straight away and I'd do it really quickly. But normally I'd want to go processively. And I'd like them to take it home. And what he's going to be doing all week is, yeah, she is really an orderly person, you know. I mean, she's even planning, you know, what time we should leave for church on Sunday morning, and it's only Friday. And, you know, I've never noticed that before, but it's really, and he'll be picking that up, and she'll be watching how nice he is when the neighbour calls for a cup of sugar. And she'll say, yeah, he really does like to be approved, doesn't he? I mean, she only asked for one cup and he's gone and given her the whole basin full, you know. And she's going to pick that up, so during this week that's what will be happening. Yeah.
What happens where the anger and the hurt's gone on for so long, right? One person is split, and one person is trying desperately to salvage what's left, and the other person doesn't want anything to do with it, won't go to counselling. The person is trying hard, has been to counselling themselves, that's not with the other party, and the other party says it's too late. How can you build any hope in that situation, or
especially
where they're not Christians too?
I would tend towards saying, let's not put the focus on salvaging the marriage. Let's put the focus on salvaging you as a person. Let's spend the next few weeks working through your pain, your behaviours, your attitudes. And you know, if your partner needs to know you're coming or you want to let them know, you let them know that's what you're coming for. And we're not talking about the marriage, we're talking about you. And that's how I would normally work. And I would not get into marriage stuff. I would stay with personality, conflict, character disorders, pain, struggles. That's where I'd try to stay.
What has been your general experience in that sort of situation?
That sometimes, you put me in a bad spot.
I'm going through it at the moment.
Sometimes as a Christian counsellor, my experience is painful because eventually the woman, say it's a woman I'm working with, she'll say, gee, that's been a tremendous help. And I really can see now what I've been doing wrong and I don't need this marriage. Right? That's something. Because she realises she's lived in a painful, destructive relationship and the only reason she's lived in it is because she's a dependent personality and she's not had the courage to stand up for herself and now she says, I don't need this. You see, and she gets out. Now that's a bit painful for me because I'm committed to reconciliation.
Well, that's what's happening.
The other situation would be where the person says, yes, I can see that there's a lot of things I've contributed wrong to this marriage. I'm going to let my partner know that. I'm going to leave the door open, and if they're prepared to take the risk, the door will be open for them to come. But one of the things that I've got to say to you is when you're working with a really painful marriage, when you're working in a marriage that has really been decimated, remember that sometimes to keep a person hanging on in hope that it'll come back together without them exploring the inappropriateness of their life and the inappropriateness of what's happened is not being fair to them. And I think we sometimes have to have the courage to risk the marriage in order to make sure these two people reach health and wholeness. One of the things I need to say to you is I know people who've been divorced and they've gone for counselling afterwards and they've got their lives together and they've remarried someone else and someone else down the journey. But you talk to them now and they say, you know, if I knew what I knew now, I could be living in harmony with my first partner. But tragically, by the time they come, it's often all too late for that. And we just have to acknowledge that. And it's painful for me as a Christian marriage counsellor to see marriages break up. But sometimes I have to recognise that it's the better of two evils. The other evil was that they go on destroying each other until there's nothing left of two human beings.
See, the other complication is young children.
Yes.
And that is the pain they're going to go through too.
But I would say that in my experience that most marriage counselling we've been involved in, reconciliation has been the goal and reconciliation has been to some point achieved. But and we've always said that marriage counselling is the most successful type of counselling we do. Because usually when two people come for counselling, they're committed to something, you know. Might not be strongly committed, but they're committed to something, and you might have to work on the strength of that commitment. Okay, we are 6 minutes late for morning tea. And what we were hoping to do, Andrew, was to be back at... All right, so make it 15 minutes. So 5, 10, 20 minutes to 12, we'll come back here. And if you haven't finished a cup of tea, if it's really hot, bring it with you and drink it here. But let's be back if we can then.